Coming up on this episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
Most tap water has over 38 contaminants in it, including all the drugs that we take, like from hormones to statins to antidepressants that get in the water supply, to pesticides and chemicals, pollutants, lead. It's pretty nasty. So I do recommend water filters. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Hyman. How you doing? I am so excited to be back for another Ask Me Anything with Dr. Mark. It's called Ask Mark. It's a live Q&A show that I'm doing for my community. It's where I take questions from my text community, and I invite all those people to join me live and ask their questions. Now, today, we got about 10 to 12 people that are going to join us to ask their questions. And if you want to ask me a question in the future, all you do is text me at 413-225-8995. That's 413-225-8995. And use the hashtag Ask Mark. And my team might pick your question for asking me in the future. Okay, so today's Ask Mark is sponsored by Thrive Market. And Thrive is one of my favorite places to get high quality organic ingredients at wholesale prices. You can get an extra 25% off your first purchase and a free gift when you join Thrive Market today. Just go to thrivemarket.com/HymanFB. All right, let's jump in with our first guest. First guest is Diane English. Hi, Diane. How you doing?
Hi, Mark. Doing great.
Good. What's your question?
My question is, why am I waking up between 1 and 3 every night and I can't go back to sleep for 2-3 hours? And it scares me, but I'm having a struggle. It's been months and months and months.
Well, that's too bad. I really feel your pain there. I think a lot of Americans, about 70 million Americans, have sleep issues. And in everything from what you're talking about, to trouble falling asleep, trouble staying asleep, trouble waking up early, interrupted sleep, sleep apnea. I mean, it's we have an epidemic of sleep disturbances, and it affects people terribly. It affects their cognitive function, their mood, their energy. And I think that a lot of people have struggles with sleep that need to be really thought through and addressed and get to the root causes, like everything else in functional medicine. And there's a lot of root causes, and some of them are quite simple. Some of it's just simple sleep hygiene. Maybe your room's too hot. Maybe it's too noisy. Maybe you're eating too late before you go to bed. Maybe you're drinking alcohol at night. Maybe you're having, too much sugar during the day, and you get blood sugar drops that'll wake you up in the middle of the night. Maybe your life is way too stressful and you haven't really kind of processed everything in the day, and you'll be ruminating in the middle of the night. And maybe you need to address the stress in your life, because that can really cause adrenal dysfunction that can lead you to wake up at 1 to 3 in the morning. Maybe it's because you really have been using too many screens, and you have light pollution, and your light exposure is affecting your melatonin production, which can, maybe you'll fall asleep because you're tired, but then you'll wake up because you really have a dysregulated circadian rhythm. So thinking about all those things is really, really important. So for me, I make sure that, one, eat 3 hours before bed. Don't eat food between, dinner and bedtime, and give yourself at least 3 hours before you go to sleep. Take a little walk after dinner. That's a good idea. Make sure you get exposed to morning light in the morning, because that'll stimulate your pineal gland, which will help you increase melatonin production, help decrease stress response and cortisol. I encourage people to meditate a lot. 20 minutes twice a day is a really great formula for addressing a lot of insomnia issues. And I love Ziva meditation, which you can find online. Making sure that you don't exercise late at night also can help a lot. Alcohol, getting rid of alcohol. Sometimes people are really sensitive to caffeine, even if they drink it in the morning. So be watching caffeine, because that can kind of keep you up sometimes at night. Make sure you get off screens at least a couple hours before bed. If you have blue light blocker glasses, those are great to put on as the sun goes down, and use them all evening. Make sure you don't be on screens a couple of really difficult challenges at night can really kind of screw your whole system up. So I really encourage people to focus on their overall sleep hygiene. I've read a lot of blogs about it. I think there's 20 tips to better sleep, and there's a lot of great books about sleep. I think, there's a lot of things people can do to help improve their sleep, whether it's, doing those things that I just mentioned. Sometimes it's just also dumping your brain at night, like, journaling and writing down all the things that are on your mind and kind of purging everything out, so you're not ruminating about it at night. And lastly, there's things you can take. Magnesium is a great relaxation mineral. It'll help you sleep. Sometimes herbs can be helpful, like valerian, passion flower, 5-HTP, melatonin. So there's a lot of really wonderful things out there that you can try to use. I use GABA, theanine. Just depending on the person, there's various supplements and herbs that can really be helpful. That's kind of where I would start with people. And if, you know, there's something else going on, you know, it could be a medical condition like hyperthyroidism or other things that can cause insomnia. So you kind of got to do a workup. But that's sort of the big view on sleep. And if you try some of those things, I bet your sleep's going to get better.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure. And I think we have Shannon next.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, Shannon. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, good, good.
Good. My question is, do you have any tips on reintroducing meat into a vegan diet, and what should I expect?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that, you know, the first question I ask you is, why do you want to introduce meat if you're vegan?
I didn't go vegan for ethical reasons. So I remember feeling my best on a paleo-ish type diet several years ago. Mm. So I'm looking to reincorporate that back into my life.
So you weren't feeling good doing pure vegan? Is that what you're sharing?
Yeah, and I'm having to avoid gluten, which, you know, main protein source is Satan in vegan diet. And it's just, I need to get my protein intake up, and I'm just looking for health benefits as well.
Yeah. So I think it's not that complicated. I was a vegetarian for 10 years, so I've been through it. I think at first it can feel heavy in your stomach. The best thing is to start with lighter things, like start with fish, and use digestive enzymes that can really help, proteases and lipases, which help digesting protein and fat. Having, you know, first, you know, maybe fish and chicken, and then you can try small amounts of red meat and sort of introduce it slowly. If you have a giant big steak, you're gonna feel uncomfortable. But I think your body starts to quickly adjust, and your pancreas will start to produce all the enzymes needed to actually digest the meat. So it shouldn't be that difficult. And I think, you know, it's important for what you're saying to highlight something really, really essential. It's part of the vegan diet philosophy, which is personalized nutrition. So it's not that I think that everybody should be vegan or paleo or anything in between. I just think that people need to really get that they need to personalize their approach to what they're eating. And you did it for yourself, tried vegan, and it didn't really work. And so you have to pay attention to that. And obviously not let your ideology trample over your biology.
Yes. Thank you.
Of course. And if everybody just put themselves on mute after you ask your question, because I'm hearing a bunch of background noise. So hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Dr. Mark. My question is that I've been taking a melatonin supplement for like 2 years, and is it safe or healthy to be taking that so continuously?
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of research on melatonin. It's generally safe to take long term. It may even suppress cancer. And I think, you know, a lot of our melatonins are screwed up because we are exposed to so much light pollution, because we have really gotten out of our circadian rhythms and our habits of waking up with the sun and going to sleep with the sun and having no lights at night. I mean, we only had electricity in the last 150 years, right? So it's like, this is all new. The light bulb has kind of screwed us up in a lot of ways, and it's really affected our life. And if you're on your screens and you're, you know, looking at that, that's going to really suppress melatonin production. So blue light blockers can really help. But I think it's okay to stay on a small amount of melatonin. It's fine.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, so we have Amanda.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, how do you recommend approaching my daughter's school to help implement some better foods?
Well, that's a great idea. You're not alone. You're not the first mother to think about how to get kids to eat healthy. First is, you know, teaching them at home and having a, you know, a safe home and getting them in the kitchen. I just posted a video of me cooking with a little boy, and we made these pancakes. And, you know, people don't understand how much kids love to play and be part of things and be involved. And I think getting them involved is key. As far as schools go, you know, there's a lot of groups out there. Conscious Kitchens is a group that works with schools to help them transform their nutrition and their food service. Big Green is one by Kimball Musk, is also doing school gardens. There's another group called My Way Cafe in Boston that's really figured out how to get these schools to do delicious food that's designed by chefs that kids will eat within the school nutrition lunch guidelines and within the school budget. It takes a little innovation. There was some need to revamp the kitchens, because most school kitchens just have deep fryers and microwaves. They really can't cook real food enough, and they get this pre-packaged processed stuff they just heat up and serve these kids, which is terrible. And then My Way Cafe is great, because they basically got really good food and made it from scratch. The workers in the kitchens at the schools were much more fulfilled. The kids were happier. They were eating the food. It wasn't getting thrown out. They were doing better in terms of academic performance. There's no lack of knowledge. In fact, in my book, Food Fix, I encourage you to check that out. There's a chapter in there about you know, the kids and stuff. And one of the things I talked about was a CDC report on nutrition and academic performance and focus and attention and behavior. And some of the research has been done when you swap out all the junk food and you give them healthy food in terms of behavior, suicide, academic performance, all those things, absenteeism. There's a lot of data about this. So I think there's a lot of resources out there. And I do talk about it in my book, Food Fix. I encourage you to check that out. You can even go to foodfixbook.com, and there's an action guide. You can download the action guide, and that tells you exactly sort of what kind of things are going on and where to plug in and where to get help. But you're not alone, and it's a great thing to do. And I think, you know, in terms of impact, you know, it's one of the areas where we do have impact because schools are local and parents have an impact. And if you get a group of parents together, you can really change the system in schools.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Great. Sure. All right. Now, next we have Abigail.
Hello.
Hi there, how are you?
Doing well, how are you?
Good.
I was wondering, what are your thoughts on fluoride, particularly for people who have problems with enamel on their teeth?
Well, fluoride is, you know, one of those controversial topics because, you know, we have had a lot of dental disease in this country, and for years, you know, kids had tons of cavities, and, you know, it really has been linked to sugar, and that's pretty clear. Even the food companies can't deny that. And there was a push to put fluoride in the water as a mass fluoridation program. I think it's helped to reduce cavities. The problem is, and there are local treatments that your dentist can do and so forth. The problem is mass fluoridation of the water has consequences because it's a particular type of molecule that interferes with thyroid function and other things and bone health. And so it's not completely free of side effects. And I think, you know, it's important for us to have enough of it, but I'm not a huge fan of sort of a mass fluoridation program. I think it might be controversial to say that, but I think we should really pay attention to some of the data that shows that mass fluoridation has really been contributing to some other issues. So I think on the whole, there are local treatments your dentist can do that are fine with kids, that they can coat their teeth and so forth. But at lower doses, I think it's okay. But I think just giving lots of fluoride to kids is potentially problematic.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think we have Adam next.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
My question for you is about gluten digestive enzymes and what to look for in a product.
Well, you know, first of all, you know, the question is what is really going on, right? Because if you're truly celiac, I don't think it's going to help. And I think just to give a background on gluten, you know, this is a real, real problem in America today and increasingly around the world for a number of reasons. One, the wheat we're eating isn't the wheat we used to eat. We've changed the breeding practices and have created something called dwarf wheat, which is a hybridized version of wheat that is essentially super starchy. It has way more gluten proteins than traditional wheat. And it also is sprayed with glyphosate at the end of harvest, and that can destroy your microbiome and cause immune issues. And it's also preserved with calcium propionate, which causes behavioral issues in kids and causes, you know, attention and all kinds of irritable behavior. So, and it's in everything. And on top of that, we've really destroyed our microbiome through our processed diet, through antibiotics, through C-sections, through, you know, environmental chemicals, has all sort of just damaged our microbiome, which has made us all have a more leaky gut. And so when we look at the real rates of celiac over the last 50 years, there's been a significant increase, a 400% increase. When you're looking at objective data, meaning they took the blood of people from 50,000 years ago they'd had on ice, and they compared it to the blood of 10,000 people today, and they found there was an actual 400% increase in true celiac. Now, 1% of the population apparently has true celiac, but there's a continuum from just mild reactions all the way to severe reactions. And some people have non-celiac gluten sensitivity. Some people have cell-mediated, you know, or T-cell-based gluten reactions, which aren't antibody-based, which you can't really detect on a test. And so, you know, it's really important to sort of figure out what your issues are. The best way to know for you is to do like at least a 3 to 4 week elimination of gluten. And sometimes you even need 3 months. And then reintroduce it and see what happens. How do you feel? And I think that's the best test you can do to determine whether you really are having significant reactions to it. And if you are, then I don't think enzyme pills are going to help. If you're mildly gluten sensitive and you want to try some of the gluten digesting enzymes, I think they can be useful, but not if you're celiac and not if you really have a significant issue or an autoimmune disease.
Thanks, Mark.
Sure. And I think Next, we have Angela.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Hi, Angela. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Hi. I was wondering. Good.
I don't see you.
If you could talk to me about, yeah, I don't know what's wrong with my camera, but at any rate, I was wondering if you could talk to me about farmed fish, specifically farmed salmon. Is farmed fish ever okay?
Yeah. So there's, you know, it's not all, you know, homogenous, that there are many challenges around fish. One is, you know, overfishing stocks that we have that are really depleting our oceans. Two is the pollution that we've put in the oceans and microplastics and heavy metals that make a lot of fish unsafe to eat, like tuna and, you know, and Chilean sea bass and swordfish and halibut and marlin and all sorts of different fish that we could eat, but that are actually pretty, pretty dangerous. And so there's been a lot of look to farming of fish. Almost when you farm fish, they often do it in crowded pens. They use a lot of feed that's not natural for the animals, like corn, and they also give them, you know, there's the disease control measures, such as antibiotics and other things that, that, you know, affect the quality of everything. And then depending on, you know, what they're eating, farmed salmon, you know, I remember Randy Hartnell from Vital Choice, which is a great fish company from Alaska, showed me how, and oh, there you are. Hi, Angela. Showed me how there's this different palette colors. Like when you pick the paint for your house, there's like a whole palette of different orange colors that the fish farmers can pick to dye their fish. And I remember being in South Africa once, and I had this big white fish, and it looked like a salmon. I'm like, what is this fish? Oh, it's a salmon. I'm like, well, why is it white? They said, well, we don't dye the fish here. So in the United States, they give them dye. Now, they may be natural dyes, but still. They also, you know, may not have the right levels of omega-3s. They might be higher in PCBs and other things, depending on the farming. There are better farming practices, and there are practices that that allow you to sort of buy farm fish that's essentially safer to eat, and it's either organic or grown in better conditions. And there's a wonderful website called cleanfish.com where they basically kind of go through and through these metrics of quality and how they treat the fish and the quality of the farming operations, provide guidance on, you know, which farm fish are the best, which fish are healthier in terms of overall, you know, practices, but also in terms of the, you know, the nutritional quality of the fish and the risk for toxins and so forth. So on the whole, I think regular farm salmon is probably not that great for you. Certainly it's better than eating sugar and processed food, but it's, you know, if you're looking to really upgrade everything, you want to get small wild salmon from Alaska. Vital Choice is a great resource. And then there are, you know, other resources like Thrive Market, which is sponsoring the show, that actually has, you know, really sustainably harvested small wild fish, and it's really great. So I think you can get the stuff you want, just to be a little more intelligent about where you're getting stuff from.
Thank you.
Did that answer your question? Yes.
Absolutely. Good. Okay. Thanks.
Okay, great. All right. And I think Sage is next.
Hi, Dr. Mark.
Sage.
I'm a behavioral health nurse. And so my question was, how do I stay healthy on night shifts? You know, something like sleep hygiene, or when should I eat?
Well, that's a tough one. I'm, you know, from someone who's lived that as an ER doctor and delivering babies and running, you know, just different crazy call schedules, I understand. You know, the truth is, when you look at the data on sleep deprivation, night shift workers, their life expectancy and disease rates are much worse than everybody else working in the daytime. So I know our society sort of mandates, and healthcare for sure requires some night shift working. I mean, it's hard, because when you're in a night shift cycle, when your day's off, you want to be awake for everybody else who's alive in the world. You want to sleep all day and miss life. So you end up kind of flopping back and forth. I mean, the best thing to do would be not stay on the same sleep schedule the whole time, which is not usually doable for people. But you know, the best you can do to keep yourself healthy is to make sure, you know, following the vegan diet, like a whole foods plant-rich diet, making sure you're cutting out the sugar and starch, which you'll crave and want to eat because you're tired. So I remember being in the ER, and all you want to do is go for the stuff, you know, and it's true, but it's a real tough battle, because you're battling your hormones. When you're sleep deprived, your ghrelin goes up, which is your hunger hormone. Your PYY goes down, which is your appetite control hormone. So you're really in a situation where you're sort of almost predisposed to eat worse. Exercise, stress reduction techniques, meditation, getting the right supplements, all that can for sure help. It's just the basic lifestyle stuff. But the keeping your schedule as much as you can in rhythm is key.
Thank you.
Sure. There's a great book. It's called The Circadian Prescription. Also, it's by my colleague and mentor, Dr. Sydney Baker. It's a bit old, but it's really a great book about the power of resetting your circadian rhythms.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Sure. Hi, Errol. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good.
My question is post working out. So obviously protein for muscle repair and carbs for energy, but are there specific foods or herbs that you would recommend for recovery for athletes?
Yeah. So what recovery really means is recovery from trauma, from inflammation and oxidative stress. And also for rebuilding and repair of muscles. So you want all the raw materials for rebuilding and repair, right? You want all the good quality protein, and you want the right amino acids in order to build muscle, which are the branched-chain amino acids, which just generally come more in animal foods. You can supplement, plant proteins with them to help, but that branched-chain amino acids are important for repair and recovery. I also think that there are certain supplements we need, like vitamin D, which is important for bone and muscle strength. I think we need the right electrolytes if we're sweating a lot. I think most of us are dehydrated intracellularly, so we're not getting the right amount of intracellular hydration, so we can drink a lot of water. But you'll see a lot of athletes, for example, who are running marathons, they can die from drinking too much water. They get diluting their blood, and you get seizures and die from hyponatremia, which is low sodium in your blood. So the key is when you hydrate with electrolytes. I also would say in terms of other supplements, there are a lot of great supplements that have to do with inflammation. So turmeric, cherry extract, boswellia. There's a whole series of them. The other thing I would say in repair and recovery are the adaptogens. So things like ashwagandha and Siberian ginseng and ginseng, even the adaptogenic mushrooms, the cordyceps and so forth, they can be very helpful in creating more resilience. And a lot of athletes have used these over the years. So I think, combining the right rest time, the sleep time, the protein, the electrolytes, the anti-inflammatory supplements, herbs, and the supplements like vitamin D and magnesium and electrolytes can be really, really helpful. So I think, sports recovery is really important. And I take it very seriously. So if you can get a massage, that's also a good thing. Or take a hot Epsom salt bath. Epsom salt bath is also great. You don't have to even have, all you need is a bathtub and some salt, basically Epsom salt. That's a great way to sort of recover and help. Because that's got magnesium in it. It's also very detoxifying, and it can really help to sort of reduce inflammation and pain.
Very awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. All right. I think that's all for questions, right? Do we have more? Ryan. Oh, Ryan. Okay, we got another question.
Hey, Dr. Ryman. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Sure. Good. How are you?
Good. So my question is, what do you recommend for a whole house water filter?
So, it's interesting. When you look at water today, you think you should be able to just drink it out of the tap. I remember, when I was a kid, we'd go on canoe trips in the Canadian wilderness and the Adirondacks and the Algonquin Park, and we just drink the water out of the lake. We wouldn't filter it, wouldn't do anything. I'm surprised we didn't get sick. But anyway, it was pretty clean back then. Now you wouldn't want to drink anything, even what's coming out of most taps. In fact, most tap water has over 38 contaminants in it, including all the drugs that we take, like from hormones to statins to antidepressants that get in the water supply, to pesticides and chemicals, pollutants, lead. It's pretty nasty. So I do recommend water filters. I like the reverse osmosis personally. There are ones that you can have installed on your whole house. I have it installed on most of the house, and I for sure for the kitchen, I have a whole reverse osmosis water filter system, so I can get clean water in the kitchen to cook with. I think some people are taking it more extremes. For example, if I was living in Cleveland, which has some of the worst water, and it's super chlorinated, so I just turn on the shower and I feel like I'm getting fumigated with chlorine. Right. And so there are shower water filters. You don't have to do the whole house water filter. Probably a carbon filter is enough for that because you're not drinking it. But I think reverse osmosis in the kitchen, if you want to do a whole house reverse osmosis, you can. That would really clean the water. But the key with that is it removes everything, right? So it removes also the minerals. It's really important to take electrolytes with your water. And that's what I was sharing a little earlier. And I like lots of different brands out there. The one I like is called Light Show. It's just like a liquid bottle. You can squirt a little bit in. It tastes kind of lemony. It doesn't taste too bad. And that electrolyte support will make a huge difference for people to really get their intracellular hydration and to replace some of the minerals that are lost when you're using the reverse osmosis filter.
Right. Great. So basically you recommend having one in the kitchen and then maybe having a filter just for the shower or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Shower, bath. I mean, it depends where your water is coming from. If your water is coming from a well and it's not chlorinated, it probably doesn't matter, you know, but yeah.
Great. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, sure. Of course. Sure. All right. So I think we are done for today. It's so great to talk to all of you. And I'm so glad that you joined us today on this episode of Ask Mark, which is sponsored by Thrive Market. If you want to ask me a question in the future, you can text me at 413-225-8995. Use the hashtag AskMark, and my team might pick your question for one of our future calls. I also want to give another special thank you to our sponsor, Thrive Market. They're always giving you the highest quality products at the lowest cost. They've been so supportive of my new book, The Pegan Diet. They even created a special Pegan Diet favorites list with a ton of my favorite products from Thrive. Plus, they're offering my community an exclusive offer to get 25% off your first purchase, an extra 25% off, and a free gift when you join Thrive Market today. So just go to thrivemarket.com/HymanFB. And if you missed the live stream, don't worry. We're going to be airing on the Doctor's Pharmacy podcast soon. And really thank you for joining us. And we'll see you next time on the Doctor's Pharmacy.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Practitioner database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who's trained, who's a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.